Good evening, everybody. Welcome to Hidden Mysteries Radio. We had to take off a week due to inclement weather. We're real glad to be back with you. How you doing this evening, Ghost?
I'm doing just fine, other than a little still cool out here.
It sure is, but at least the bridges aren't iced over. And despite the fact that just about every year we have 2 or 3 days of this stuff, we're never prepared for it here in Texas. So when the ice comes, the bridges ice over, and anybody who's able to hunker down and stay home, that's the best thing for it, and that's what we did. But we're back, and this week's show, I think, is going to be really entertaining. It's going to be a fun show for me to do. We're going to be talking about the first book that was ever published by HiddenMysteries.com, and the book is titled Mysteries of the Pyramid. It's written by a man named David H. Lewis. Let me give you a little bit of background on the book. This is a review from Science Research Publishing House. This book is unparalleled in its collection of documented facts concerning a time capsule tomb that has been hidden far below the base of the Great Pyramid of Giza, which was discovered in June of 1976 by an actual expedition of scientists, archaeologists, and engineers. This discovery was the end result of 40 years of intensified research that eventually revealed a secret opening on the south slope of Giza's external covering. The findings within this tomb, sealed for more than 10,000 years, is a revelation to all mankind. The contents of this book should be regarded as one of the greatest discoveries of our time, for the records found there pinpoint the dates from man's first footprint on Earth, beginning in 576,001 B.C., to his last imprint after the turn of this century in the Holocaustal years. This tomb reveals not only the names of the varied civilizations preceding Adam's time, but where they originated and how we became populated throughout these thousands of centuries. There are documented facts of esoteric knowledge that we have long sought regarding alien power and the technologies of our ancient races. There are revealing facts pertaining to the cities within our Earth, maps that route all universal travel, proof that Atlantis did exist as an advanced, thriving metropolis, the cities of great renown that were here prior to Adam and Eve, their mode of transportation, and their advanced culture. These are but a few chosen facts that are revealed in this writing, within each and every fact carrying a definite message to all people of this world. It is the only publication of its kind. Now that is a mighty big bunch of claims right there, and the fact that it was the first book that you published leads me to believe that there may be a lot to these claims. Could you tell us a little bit about why you chose this book to be the first book that you published?
Well, to get to that point, I have to tell you how we came across it. Al Bielek, many people know the name, who was the one of the survivors on the Philadelphia experiment, who was out on the ship and it disappeared, and him and his brother were the survivors. He stayed with me for about 6 months 1 year while his leg had been injured or something, and he was letting it heal up. And I had the privilege of letting him stay with me, and the man is a genius. He's passed away now, and I'm going to miss him. I'd already miss him horribly, but he was a man that he told you what he knew about the Philadelphia experiment, and that's everybody thought that's what he was all about. But if you ever got to asking him questions, he would never volunteer information until you asked him. And then he knew a lot of stuff, a lot more than people gave him credit for. But he had a copy of this book, and he knew David H. Lewis and traveled with him throughout the United States and traveled with him throughout Australia as they were giving their esoteric type tours where they talked about the strange and the supernatural and the unnatural and the conspiracies and the research. They traveled together, and they were pretty good. They were really good friends, and he gave me the book to read, and I read it. It was unbelievable, and I read it again, and I thought, this is incredible. And Al Bielek knew the man, and when the man passed away, Al Bielek had all the printing rights to the material because the man had no living relatives. He'd never married and had no children and had given all that over to Al Bielek because Al Bielek was more or less in touch with that industry. These were had all been self-published during David Lewis's lifetime. And he was not a highly educated man, because if you'd seen the books before we edited much of the English that was badly, badly written and misspelled words and stuff. We left a lot of them in there just because it kept the flavor for the original author. But he surrounded himself with highly knowledgeable people, experts, engineers, archaeologists, scientific geniuses, linguistics. He surrounded himself with geniuses as he made these expeditions into the pyramid. And I just heard him say a while ago about reading from the review he gave that he went into the south side entrance. Now, everybody familiar with the pyramid knows that the entrance that we all enter now for the tourists is not on the south side. But Strabo, the ancient geographer during Caesar's time, who was the official geographer and of the world at that time, claimed he went into the pyramid and shown by the priest the entrance on the south side. And everybody figured, well, he just wrote it down wrong. Well, the man was a geographer. I imagine he knew which way was south and which way was north, especially on something that could mistake it being the biggest sundial in the world. And that's how we came across the book and how we got the rights to print it. And it's been verified by people that were on that mission, these archaeological investigations and incursions into the pyramid that were with him. They have called and verified it. His artist called me, verified it. And we've talked to one relative of his. It was not a close relative, but it was a relative that knew about him, but didn't know him very personally themselves. And that's how we came to the book and why we decided to pick it up and publish it again, because it had only been published by him, and it had been long forgotten. And this was information I thought the world needed to know, because if this is true, we've all been sold a bill of lies when it comes to archaeology and the ancient civilization on the planet Earth.
All right, well, when we come back after this short commercial break, we're going to talk a little bit about the author himself, David H. Lewis, and we'll get into how the whole expedition got started and what it was they discovered. We'll be back right after these words.
Truth seekers and freedom-loving Texans, HiddenMysteries.com is the place to find those hard-to-locate books for your research. HiddenMysteries.com has the largest and most diverse knowledge-based selection on the Internet today. Be sure and visit HiddenMysteries.org for over 12,000 free articles for truth seekers. Visit HiddenMysteries.com today or call 903-876-3256 for a free catalog.
All right, well, we're back, and we're going to talk about the author, David H. Lewis. But before we get into it, I want to say I spent a couple of days this week reading this book, and I have read a lot of different books on various esoteric subjects, paranormal, that sort of thing, but it's never really been my bailiwick. But this book, I highly recommend it to everybody, because no matter what you may think of what's in it, it's one of the most interesting things I've ever read. The guy really did tons of research. It really is a treasure trove, isn't it, Ghost?
Oh, yes, it is, because they've got facts in there that, if true, that it awakens the mind in a way that you wouldn't even dream possible about how we've all been sold a bill of goods that's not true. Whether it's intentional or not, it doesn't matter. It's just that our whole entire world history is a lie.
Right. Well, let's start off a little bit with a little bit about David H. Lewis. It says David H. Lewis was born in Ocean City, New Jersey, as the second son of the Reverend Marple M. Lewis, whose Baptist ministry became a legend of greatness throughout the country. During his ministerial years, Reverend Lewis began studying pyramidology in 1934 in order to acquire a background of historical knowledge in Bible prophecy. Thus fortified with data concerning our civilization from its beginning to its end, Reverend Lewis was in an unexcelled position to teach the prophecies and establish hope among those who followed his lectures and teachings. David Lewis learned much of the Great Pyramid of Giza during his younger years when accompanying his father on the lecture tours. And after his father's death, he continued in this field of scientific research, but went one step further. His aim was a study of all unknown and heretofore unexplainable phenomenon that involved God's creation, the center of universal intelligence, inhabited planets beyond our galaxy, cities within our Earth, and those beneath the seas, the destinies of mankind, and our reason for being here. Mr. Lewis, together with the support of other researchers, has spent countless hours and years pondering over ancient transcripts, hieroglyphics, microfilms, and writings directly related to those ancients prior to the era of Adam and Eve, in order to reveal life as it could have been and not as it is today. Mr. Lewis, as well as a world-renowned author and lecturer, carries many more talents to his credit than can be listed in this summary. Among some of his accomplishments, he is considered as an outstanding pyramidologist and an authority on the mysterious flying saucer phenomenon. He is knowledgeable on oceanography, mysterious happenings around the world through astral projection and teleportation, and has a keen perspective of our hollow Earth, its inner cavities and passageways. He is also credited builder, designer, architectonics developer, chemist, researcher, and inventor, to name but a few. His present ambition during this next decade is to penetrate the minds of man in the fact that there is a God and there is an afterlife. His writings are aimed at the scientific level to the true religion of God that is more understandable to all those who approach the learning of God and universe. He has, through his writings, taken away much of the shroud that has clung to man's mind regarding an afterlife and man's direct purpose as an entity of the original spirit from which he began. In his writings, he is condensing historical times and speaks freely of the new pending laws by government and tells it like it is, what's coming down on the heads of man and the tribulations he must face in the next two decades. Now, this biography that was written about Mr. Lewis, it was written probably 30 years ago. Now, Mr. Lewis is no longer with us. Is that correct?
That's correct. He passed away, I think, in 86. He was mysteriously disappeared, taken out. And remember, that biography was written at the early point of his writing career, if you call it a career. It was not his final biography, which would be totally different about the religious angle.
So he changed his views on religion?
Well, he changed his views on how the pyramid and religion were affecting each other, or how they connected.
He
started that mission into the pyramid to prove that it verified the Bible in timeline and in the angles in the mention of it. I think it's in Isaiah where they mention the pyramid of the rocks between the two borders. But he changed his tone after he got in there and discovered what he discovered. There's a whole lot more Kabbalah going on than people realize when it comes to that pyramid. We call it Kabbalah, but it's probably even dates before that.
Well, it's interesting that you bring up Kabbalah, because as we'll see shortly, a lot of the script and a lot of the things that had to be translated were partially made out of some form of ancient Hebrew. But let's get right to that. Now, the way this whole thing started was that there was an expedition made to the center of the Great Pyramid of Giza. Could you tell us a little bit about the team of people who went on this expedition?
Like I said, I know that they were all experts in their own field, and they were a lot of different. You know, they weren't all the same type of scientists. They were all different. And there's not much known about who went on there with him individually, because for whatever reason, he did not reveal their names, probably for their own safety. I have talked to some of them that have been on there that claim they were on that mission with him. And one of them was on all seven of them. And they've called me and talked to me about it. And they work in places, it's unbelievable where they're located and what they do now. And I won't even tell what I know about them as far as and where they work. But because they called and let me know, I have a whole lot more belief or faith in what these books say than I had before. Because some of it's so incredible, it's hard to think that this could not possibly be true. But then when you got somebody with, you know, 40 or 50 PhDs behind their name saying, oh, I went with him, and it is true, it does tend to change your mind.
Well, sure. Now, to give everybody a little bit of background, get them up to where we are to understand what we're talking about with these expeditions. The whole thing started, the story of the secret tomb of Giza, back in 1936, when a group of construction workers who were involved in a minor land excavation 60 miles east of Athens disturbed a buried concrete vault at, according to the book, 97 feet below the rocky terrain of the surface. And they thought at first it was a wine cellar, and when they opened it, there were no bones from a burial, and they discovered that it wasn't a wine cellar. And they found it was a 6-foot by 12-foot vault, and they found a box in there that had a parchment in it. And if I'm not mistaken, they used this parchment contained the key to entering that to the south entrance to the tomb of Giza, right?
I think it had it in an encrypted form. They had to do a lot of work on it and interpret to find out exactly what it said.
Right.
Even when they were up there, they didn't realize exactly what it said. They had to do a little bit of experimentation before they actually got into the south side.
Right. Right here in the introduction to the book, it says they found two scrolls, two ancient scrolls that were totally unrecognizable in language, but were believed to be a combination of part Hebrew of the first origin, some Arabic, more of a Mayan tongue, and the basis for the writing on these scrolls in the Atlantean alphabet. Are you familiar enough with the Atlantean alphabet to explain to the folks what that means?
Well, it's just another alphabet, like along the Sumerian line of alphabets. It's a crypto alphabet, kind of like hieroglyphics. Mm-hmm. And not a whole lot known about it. A lot of them call it the Enochian alphabet, too.
Right. Now here's the thing. It was a big deal to translate it. It took a long time and a lot of work. And when they translated it, it says, taken from the Atlantean abstract, it read as follows. At the preciseness of one, a passage of revelation befalls the seeker of eternal truth. Its key of knowledge lies with verbal tones for 35 of 60. Now, that turned out to be a real riddle where at a certain time of day, standing at a certain angle from the pyramid, you had to make a certain sound and a certain tone, and a stone would move aside, right?
I think the 35 and 60 numbers were the location of the right rock in the pyramid to open.
Right, and then there, the way into it was something about you had to...
Abracadabra.
Right, exactly. Or
it's not abracadabra. That's where the story comes from.
Right, to make it more understandable to younger people, you know, just think of the Lord of the Rings movies, when they went to go down into the mines, the ancient dwarven mines, they found the door and it says say friend and pass. And what that meant was you had to say friend a certain way and the door opened.
They had to use the right verbal intonation. And it wasn't the words abracadabra. That's exactly where the word abracadabra comes from. It's from Aleph, Beit, Gimel, Dalet, which is the Hebrew or Sumerian starting of the alphabet.
Right.
And then to even make it more curious, it had to be said backwards to get out. You know, that's what you got in with, but you had to say it backwards to get out. So whoever designed that thing had to be really brilliant. You know, remember the Beatles doing their albums backwards, and we thought that was really something. This was done millennia ago by people who knew what they were really doing.
Well, now, once they got there and they managed to get this stone to move aside and they went in, what did they find?
Found stairs.
Okay.
Stairs and more stairs. And what's interesting, it was 49 steps and a landing. 49. You got to remember, the whole world is in mathematics. 49 is 7 times 7, 49. The landing for each 49 steps is 50. And 50 is your Jubilee year. So everything relates back to, like I say, into the Kabbalah, or even older than the Kabbalah, the ancient Judaism, perhaps pre-Judaism, which might have been ancient Egyptian type religion. But it all goes back to these same mathematical figures and representations. in there on the landing, you can see doors at every landing. They go back into the pyramid somewhere. They couldn't get into those doors. I don't know if they tried very hard, but they were more interested in getting to the bottom of the stairwells than going through the doors. But now we've heard recently how they've been found doors in there with handles and that have fallen off and hinges, and they sent little robots in there to drill through them to see if they can see on the other side. Of course, they won't see anything except dark rooms, but y'all are really going to want to read this book.
Well, and that brings us to our next break, and when we come back, we'll talk a little bit about what was at the bottom of those stairs.
Are you an unpublished author? You can get your manuscript published at incredibly low prices. TGS Publishing is the largest print-on-demand publisher in Texas. Visit tgspublishing.com for more details. Order as few as 50 copies of your book and keep your capital for marketing. TGS Publishers can get your literary work into print and published. tgspublishing.com.
All right, well, we're back, and we'd like to remind everybody to please check out our sponsors. Now, when we went to the break, we had been discussing the steps leading down into the chamber. Now, when they got to the bottom of those steps, what did they find, Ghost?
Found two mysterious doors. And we ought to remind them, they were fighting dirt and dust all the way down this whole path. It's been several thousand years since somebody had been in there, and the dust was knee deep or ankle deep everywhere they were going. They came to these two doors. I don't remember what they did to get them open. They got them open and went into a room. There was not a speck of dust at all in there. It was a clean room. It was the Hall of Records that everybody's been looking for. The Hall of Records is underneath the pyramid. And David H. Lewis was the first man that we know of in modern times that found it. I'm sure Strabo saw it when he was there. But David H. Lewis, and like I say, I believe after having the phone calls from these other people that were with him on those expeditions, that he's telling us the truth. He might not have put all the points and connected all the dots correctly, but what he found, he's relating as fact, and I believe they are truly facts.
Well, what kind of records did they find in this Hall of Records?
Well, he described them to be much like a phono record as far as the look of it. Other than they weren't plastic, they were out of a different kind of material. And they weren't made to be played with a needle. They were more of a visual type of a recording.
Well, how do you mean that, a visual type recording? Were there symbols on it that you looked at? Or
there were symbols on it that he looked at, and there was also machines there to play them, at least put the symbols on the screen for you. Or you could actually read them off the disc itself.
So there was a device in there with a screen, and when you put these discs in, it played the symbols on the screen?
I don't know if he got to actually operate it or he just saw the machine. I remember Al Billick was telling me about it, that some of the machines they were trying to get to work, you know, trying to play with or figure out how they worked, and they couldn't figure out how to actually turn them on. They just knew they were there, and some of them obviously what they were for. They saw one down there that was actually a machine to raise these rocks, build the pyramid. I mean, it would, by some sort of sound or laser sound, it would raise the rocks and the pyramid slabs and put them into place.
Right. Well, and I'm glad you bring up the machine that they were using to lift the rocks, because one of the things that he goes into in detail in the book is how impossible it would have been to build the pyramids in any way. There's absolutely no explanation for it that can't be easily debunked by an engineer or a physicist. Not just the giant stones that it was built out of, but even just the kind of wood that would have been required to build the scaffolds to go around the thing. You know, the native tree of Egypt is the palm tree. So to get the hardwood that they would have needed to build these the scaffolding, you know, required for the construction of a great big pyramid like that, they would have had to come across the desert with it. When you calculate the weight of the logs that they would have been pulling, if it was something like, if you had humans pulling the thing across the desert, the amount of manpower that would have taken to pull one of these logs it would have been 14 miles long. And as any physicist could tell you that, you know, after a certain distance on there, you lose all your pulling power, and you would have only actually had the pulling power of a few hundred people. And I don't think there's ever been a sufficient explanation given as to how humans, with the technology that they had in ancient Egypt, could possibly have not only moved the wood, but lifted those stones. Could you expound on that a little bit?
Well, we've been kept in the dark, like I said earlier. There's the man that built the coral park down in Florida, who raised all those several ton stones by himself. And they claimed that he used some sort of sound device that he had invented, or he claims he didn't invent it, but actually got the drawings or the ideas from a book he found in Great Britain. The technology's been around, but the average public is not allowed to know it. We're kept in the dark while people in the know, say higher government officials or shadow government officials, know what's going on. And they know where this material is, they know where the technology is, and they're waiting to use it for their benefit and not ours. You know, David Lewis went into this thing for one reason only, and by the time he got through the first door, he realized this reason's not right. You know, this doesn't prove the Bible, or the Bible doesn't prove the pyramid, or the pyramid doesn't prove the Bible. It has nothing to do with one another, which is absolutely right. Neither one should be compared to each other. There is nothing in the Bible that suggests that the pyramids were a time recorder for the Bible events, or vice versa. It's totally absent. It's just in the minds of what I call Christian no-gooders, because they know nothing.
That's what I was going to say. What you meant by no-gooder is that is what you're saying, that most Christians today don't understand the nature of, you know, their own holy texts and that sort of thing?
Well, most of them don't even bother to read it anymore, so it's not a matter of understanding. They all trust their feeble-minded preachers to tell them what it says. You know, and the few preachers or religious men in history that have embraced the pyramid for what it was and not for some kind of biblical meaning are the ones to appreciate, because they've written some of the best research material ever written on it. And then some of them were preachers. But they didn't confuse the fact that it was not a religious structure. It never was to be a religious structure. That's not what it was intended for. But as David H. Lewis was down in this thing, he saw this room, this hall of records was a round room. And there were windows all the way around him. And he never did go into any further detail about why the windows were all around this whole room when you're underground. What are you going to be looking at?
Well, perhaps they were for somebody to look in.
What makes David H. Lewis's book more believable is not sometimes not what he said or what other people said, but what other authors have said in the past. One of them was Strabo in the South Entrance. David H. Lewis basically verified what Strabo had to say. But you got one book that was found in South America called The Emerald Tablets of Thoth. And you read these tablets and the translations of them, and you find that Thoth says he buried a spaceship underground for use of mankind in the latter days. And lo and behold, this guy's in a round room with windows all around. It sounds just like a flying saucer. And what more could, you know, verification would you need to accept that something's going on here that we don't know the whole story? And David H. Lewis has opened up 5 or 6 pages in this 1,000-page book to let us peek in to see what they've been hiding from us.
Well, sure. Now, we're talking about the records and all. What do the records tell us? Is there a message in the pyramid?
Well, the Hall of Records was was preservation of knowledge. It was preservation of the history of mankind. It told of all mankind prior to Adam. You know, we know that there was humans on Earth prior to Adam. If you even take the biblical account, it says there was. But it's what those civilizations were, where they were located, and where they came from.
Right. Now, and according to Lewis, now the first humans came from a planet outside our solar system. Is that right?
Oh, yes. Yeah, they make the ancient alien theory much more plausible after reading this book.
Now, according to Lewis, there have been six civilizations of man, and we're in the sixth one. And he said that in the pyramid that it made a prophecy of an apocalypse to come. Now, Lewis calculated that it would have happened in 2001, but it didn't. Would you like to address that?
Well, he made the mistake of trying to, at that point in time in his life, because he's still the son of a Baptist preacher trying to prove a religious theory. And he made the mistake, like many people do, of trying to connect dots that aren't there to be connected. He was trying to mix the prophecies the possible predictions he was finding down there in the pyramid with the biblical predictions of St. John of the New Testament. And the two just don't mix. St. John has been disproven every time the history of clock ticks off another century, when all the Christians jump out and say it's the end of time, it's the century's up, it's over, he's coming tomorrow. It never happens. You know, it's just, that's the mindset he was in at the time. Well, he didn't stay that way. Understand me. He renounced all that kind of crap later on. But at this point in time in his life, he was still much the religious man as far as Christianity was concerned.
So what you're saying basically is that he had all the facts right, but he was just looking at them through the wrong lens.
We had all the facts right as what he's discovering in the pyramid.
Right.
It was connecting dots that were outside the pyramid back into it.
Sure. Well, let's go back to the what they found in there. This is from the book. It says, in the exposed but shielded records covering man's reign on Earth, taken from the tomb beneath the pyramid, it clearly lists man's initial movement on Earth. Our first visitation to inhabit the Earth were members of the Acurian race in the year 576-001, that's 576,000 B.C., or 572,001 years prior to Adam. These visitors came from the far planet of Acuria, recorded as being 9,470 light years from Earth. The Acurians occupied our planet for a period not less than 75,000 years, during which others made frequent visitations with the same curiosity of a newly discovered world. This race created their own total destruction, but the cause of their self-destruct was never made clear. From crude markings, we can only assume that earthquakes played the major role in the complete devastation. While inhabiting our surface, their accomplishments were relatively few. They were master miners, not to the degree of accomplishing beneficial energies for the people, but this effort leaned more towards the selfishness of mineral greed, jewels, etc. We have learned that they were master architects of unusually fine structures and roadbeds that were generally suspended above the surface. They were engineers of the highest degree, and to this very day, some of the Acurian inner earth carvings still remain, or tunnel systems. Now, as you just said, this really lends credence to the ancient aliens theory. There's a series out now called Ancient Aliens. What do you think about the whole ancient aliens theory?
Well, I think it's time to push the theory and to start doing some research and bring out the facts.
Yeah.
You know, the Planet Nibiru theory is a theory until it's going to be proven eventually. But if you go to the story of Nibiru in the Sumerian text and you read about it and you find out this little thing, it's just barely mentioned, but it's about the Titans. And you got the Titans in mythology of Greece, but they don't play an important role because there's not much known about them. But the Titans were a giant race that inhabited this earth. They were here to dig up and mine the gold. And mine the gold they did, and it was for the Nibiruan king, because they needed the gold in Nibiru for whatever reason, for their electrical energy grids, and they didn't care about planet Earth. They didn't even want to be here. Actually, they were kind of punished. They were being punished by being here to having the mine for a while.
Well, you know, most ancient religions in their creation stories, they have that same narrative about the giants and so forth. In Genesis 6, there's a passage that about there were giants, men of great renown who lived in the earth in those days who took human women and found them fair. I'm not quoting it exactly, but that's the gist of it. And Lewis seems to think that that may allude to the mixed-race Lemurians. And that's an idea that's older than just the Judaic creation stories, isn't it?
Well, it's older than that. Even that goes back to the reptilian source of mankind, of some mankind. Not all of them were of the reptilian breed that were put here. So, you know, we were planted on this planet.
Seeded, would you say?
Seeded, planted. You can read Charles Fort's book for one. You can read Brinsley Lepore Trench for another, who talks about, both of these authors talk about these types of alien interventions that have been going on. And they did nothing but verify what David had already found back in his intrusions or incursions into the pyramid. There are ancient civilizations that have disappeared from this planet. There are alien interventions that, like I say, seeded mankind. And you got to wonder, because you talk, like you're talking about the Bible version, that we know, according to the Bible, there were people here on the earth before Adam. Adam was the first red man, technically. And
now, what do you mean by red man?
That's what the word means, red dirt.
Ah.
Adam means red dirt.
But by red man, you mean he was red-skinned? Or?
Well, it could be, but then again, white babies are very red when they're born.
Sure, white men.
Because that's one thing that scared Noah. I mean, scared Noah's father, Lamech, whenever Noah was born. He was so red, and that wasn't normal, which tends to believe that Lamech and them were not white people. Because Noah was so white and so red, scared him to death. He thought that Mrs. Lamech had been playing with them giants that are the angels.
All right. Well, we're running a little past due for our next commercial break, so we'll take that now, and we'll be right back.
Truth seekers in freedom-loving Texas. HiddenMysteries.com is the place to find those hard-to-locate books for your research. HiddenMysteries.com has the largest and most diverse knowledge-based selection on the Internet today. Be sure and visit HiddenMysteries.org for over 12,000 free articles for truth seekers. Visit HiddenMysteries.com today or call 903-876-3256 for a free catalog.
Okay, well, before we left for that break, we had been talking about what was at the bottom of those stairs. And we talked about the control room or flying saucer or hall of records, whatever combination of things that it may have been. Now, there was something else down there, was there not? Something about a tunnel and maybe a train?
Yeah, David Lewis went through the exit door on that round room and found himself a train track and a train down there underground at the bottom of this hall of records.
And what did the train lead to?
Well, he don't know exactly where it led to that I remember, but he followed the tunnel as far as he could until it collapsed. But he did find maps of where it's supposed to go to, I believe. But I think that people probably want to read that for themselves.
Yeah, that's the thing, is what we're doing here, we're not... This book contains so many facts, so much analysis. There's no way that we could cover 1/100th of what's in here in an hour show. If we wanted to talk seriously about just getting all this across to you, we'd probably have to do a 2-hour show every day for a month. And that's why, you know, I really recommend this to everybody. Regardless of what you may think of the veracity of the material in it, I'm telling you, this thing is so interesting. It really, the way that it's such hidden information, it reminds me a lot of the end of Raiders of the Lost Ark when the U.S. government took the Ark away from Indiana Jones, and he said, "Well, you know, what are you doing with it?" And he said, "We're going to have people look into it." And he said, "What people?" And he said, "Top people." And the next scene showed them putting it in a hidden box and shipping it into a warehouse that looked like it was 10 miles deep and just filled up with boxes. This information
there really are people out there, people in high places, as you said earlier, who don't want this information out.
Right. They've covered up for mankind because they know that the whole energy shortage thing is a fraud, because they know that the energy technology is already available in that pyramid. It's got the instructions. It knows how to do it. And we're being denied that so we can keep paying the Rothschilds their money every month. But it goes into detail about how he found maps and stuff to subterranean cities under there, too. And he even wrote a book later on about the subterranean cities. He actually went out and researched them and tried to find them. I think he found some. Somewhere in the United States. And it's just incredible. He verifies books that he probably didn't even know existed. One of them was Eddie Dorpa. Eddie Dorpa is supposed to be a fictional account, even though several Masons... Freemasons say it's not a fiction, it's an actual account of a man that went into an underground system in Kentucky. He was banned there by some Freemasons. He did something the Freemasons didn't like, and they sent him down there to teach him a lesson. But he comes back the whole story, and it's really a very unique book also.
Do you print that book?
Oh, yes. We got Eddie Dorpa. We also got the Emerald Tablets of Thoth, and we have the Mysteries of the Pyramid. With these are the three we've talked about so far tonight. All available at HiddenMysteries.com, of course.
And we'll make sure that those books are posted with a link in the article below the show tonight. Now, on the part about, you know, all the technology that was down there, just to bring up as an aside that I think is interesting, if you remember during Operation Desert Storm, the first Iraq war, that's when that war started. Suddenly it was just sprung on the American people that we had fighter jets, fighter bombers, and bombers that had this fantastic technology called stealth technology. There were stealth fighters and stealth bombers, and immediately the conspiracy theorists started saying, you know, this is alien technology, and even the U.S. government acknowledged that this was some of the stuff that they were working on out there by Roswell. Hangar 18 stuff. Is it possible that one of the reasons that people like, you know, the U.S. government, the New World Order, whatever you want to call it, don't want this information out there and will do anything necessary to debunk it, to stifle it, and that sort of thing, is because that they have been or are working on weapons technology, surveillance technology, or who knows, time travel technology, any type of means to control the masses with, based on information that was in that Hall of Records in the pyramid.
Are you asking me a question about that? Or?
Well, I'm asking if you think that's a possibility, or if you know.
I'm sure it's a possibility. I'm sure it's a probability more than possible. Like, they know that the energy sources are available free of charge to every human on Earth if they ever wanted to release the technology so everybody knows how to use it. This is what Tesla was into and trying to arrange for mankind when they just about crushed him. I mean, they crushed him to where he couldn't do anything ever again. And they did it through the banks. The bankers crushed him. Not because he owed them money, but because now they fix it so he could never borrow money to get his projects going again. This is going on and on. People ask, well, how did this guy get into the pyramid? Where did he get the money to do that? You know, it's not a simple thing to arrange for 7 or 8 geniuses to come along with you to go into an incursion of the pyramid and search for things that, according to the whole world, does not exist.
Well, who did finance that?
Well, besides his own that he could raise it with the people he knew from his father being a famous preacher, because a lot of his early travels were done by Christian donations. But after the first one, and he revealed to one government official what he found, that government official then started financing it and making sure he had access to the pyramid whenever he wanted to go back in. And that was Anwar Sadat. Anwar Sadat financing. Now, what he had us probably, he didn't ever mention this in the book, but it was probably because one of the planets that supposedly seeded our planet was called Anwar.
Well, now, how many times did Lewis go into the pyramid?
If I'm right, he went 7 times. It's been a while since I've read that book, but I think it was at least 7.
All right, well, now...
Now, correct me.
We're coming up on the end of our show, so in the last couple of minutes, is there anything else, any esoteric knowledge, or just whatever that you'd like to let people know that you think is of interest about what Mr. Lewis discovered in the pyramid?
Well, he's got 7 books out that we've been able to locate. He's written 9, but we've only been able to locate 7 of them. And if you can read Beyond Our Galaxy and the Universal Oneness, you're going to find out how he abandoned Christianity. Maybe not, he didn't. I don't think he abandoned his God or his belief like that, but he abandoned the religion itself.
The doctrine.
Because there's more to it than just what the Bible told him. And he began to understand that because aliens did come and talk to him about what he discovered. Sat with him. Broke bread with him. They're not unlike us. They're not, you know, it's much like you think about the story of Abraham and the two gentlemen that came to talk to him. They broke bread together. And they sat down in a restaurant and ate. He said they had one thing they sprinkled on their food that came from their planet, and it was some sort of type of seasoning that was made out of beef. It wasn't available here. So you're going to find out a whole lot of stuff by reading David H. Lewis. Concepts you'd never dream possible. And at the same time, he confirms things that you've probably heard from other authors or from other radio shows, from other sources throughout your life. But one thing about it, I do believe that he found what he said he found. You know, his conclusions may be wrong. His ideas may not have been connected right as far as what he get from what he chose to believe from it. I do think he found what he said he found. And I believe with what I've been finding lately around the Gaza a plateau verifies the probability of what he said was there. You know, they discovered that the whole ship that was buried there near the Giza plateau, and they found more of the king's records, more of the king's tombs. They've now discovered the tunnels underneath the Sphinx. They know the tunnels lead up to the pyramids. So it goes on and on and on. They're letting us go all the way around it without letting us have in the middle of the bonanza.
Well, and I'd like to point out that in this world where so much knowledge is suppressed and so much information is censored, that when a brave soul does what it takes to go out and gather the information, there are so many gaps generally left that a person has to make leaps of faith about their own interpretations of what it means, what's missing, etc. And it's not just about things like this. That's just the way that it goes. And as you said, as people research further and further, they find out more and more of the information, and we get a more coherent picture of it. But, you know, we have to really give credit to a guy like David Lewis, who went and did all the research, put his feet on the ground, went into the pyramid, and did so many other things. This really is a treasure trove for anybody who's looking for ancient truths, wouldn't you say?
True. And for a man like Al Bielek to treasure that book and treasure his friendship with this man, you know, he'd been dead 20 years whenever Al Bielek was telling me all this. And care enough about it to make sure that his books were still available by handing us the right to print them, because he wanted to, but he didn't have the funds to get it done and get the project off the ground. You got to give – something's going on here, folks.
And remind the audience who Al Bielek is.
Al Bielek was the survivor of the Philadelphia experiment. They made movie after movie after movie about Bielek and those in the Philadelphia experiment, about how the ship disappeared in the Philadelphia harbor, then reappeared. And him and his brother, the ones that survived it, where the other men were trapped in the steel hulls and stuff. And he says now the movies are all fiction, but something very similar did happen.
Well, at this point, we're going to take our final break, and we'll come back and wrap up real quick on the other side of these announcements.
Are you an unpublished author? You can get your manuscript published at incredibly low prices. TGS Publishing is the largest print-on-demand publisher in Texas. Visit tgspublishing.com for more details. Order as few as 50 copies of your book and keep your capital for marketing. TGS Publishers can get your literary work into print and published. tgspublishing.com.
Okay, well, we're back for our final segment. I hope everybody who's listening has enjoyed the show. I think one of the things that sets us apart from other shows of this nature is that we don't claim to be gatekeepers of any knowledge. We don't believe that you have to go and have a whole bunch of alphabet soup of letters behind your name to be able to ask questions and understand things. We're a couple of guys in East Texas who want to know the truth. We're not afraid to ask questions and follow the truth wherever it'll lead. I'm sure most of you out there feel the same way. And that's really why you print the type of books you print, isn't it, Ghost?
Yes, I do believe that this information should have been made available for many years before we found it. But the fact that it wasn't, is irregardless, it's available for you now. This man was very prolific about wanting to get this information out during his few years he was alive after his discovery. And we found it unusual that he was murdered in the way he was murdered, left in his car dead. And at the same time, a year later, Anwar Sadat was assassinated. All this is a little too coincidental sometimes to be to accept as pure coincidence. But he was, like I say, he was very prolific about wanting to get the word out. He wrote 9 books in less than 5 years. Got them published or published them himself. Raised the funds for it. Then went on the road to tell the story and sell the books, or to sell the books about the story also. And little is known about David H. Lewis now. He was never given really credit for what he discovered, even though a few of those names that are in the books have called me and talked to me about the book. And just to let you, for you to understand just how many books there were and what he wrote about, I'm going to let Asbador read the titles off to you, because I think it would be really interesting for people to hear the titles alone.
Sure. The titles of books written by David H. Lewis that are available on HiddenMysteries.com are, of course, the book we're talking about tonight, Mysteries of the Pyramid. He has a book called Beyond Our Galaxy, an account of alien existence taken from the documented records found in the secret tombs of the Great Pyramid. He has a book called The Universal Oneness, another called Incredible Cities of Inner Earth, another called The Days Before Tomorrow, and Survival of the Remnant. And, of course, there's one more called Cities of the Deep. All the books that I just listed are written by David H. Lewis and available at HiddenMysteries.com. Anything you'd like to say about any of those particular titles?
All interesting books. I mean, even the ones I don't agree with theologically, were still very interesting to read, because the man had put his eyes in what he believed into writing, and it may very well be the truth that I'm just too blind to see it, or you may see it and I don't. That's why I think they're worth reading. He took the government conspiracies of the day, of that era, and pointed out why this earth is doomed from them continuing on the path they were continuing on. And we see that same path being continued on right now. So while it's theologically not my cup of tea, he's still, in current events, he's correct.
Well, yeah, and there were a lot of things I noticed about that, too. He pointed out... we're looking at somebody writing from the perspective of a person living around 1980. And he pointed out then, things like the increasing agitation and animosity between the races, the increasing agitation between nations, the constant state of war. And, you know, none of these things have gotten better. They've all, exactly as he claimed the prophecies in the tomb said they would, they have gotten worse, wouldn't you say, since 1980?
That's what I'm saying. His current events and his predictions on that were very right on. And that's why I give him credit for what he did right. I mean,
well,
I'd say he may have been an idiot, what we call an idiot savant, a genius, but didn't act like one. But he knew his stuff, and he knew what he was going for, and he knew how to get it done, whether he did it himself or whether he had to get help. It didn't matter. He translated these discs, and you know, over in China, they found a similar disc with strange writings on it, in much about the same diameter, too. I don't know what material it was over there, but I thought it was very interesting that everything he found is being refound in different places of the world. You know, they got pyramids all over the world now. We know the ones in South America. We found out now they got them in China that are being guarded, and nobody's allowed to go near them over by the government there.
Well, you know, 10 years ago, Art Bell called all this information that comes out, he referred to it as the quickening, because it seems like with every new discovery, 10 new discoveries pile right on top of it, and they all seem to converge along a similar narrative. You think that's a pretty accurate way to put it?
I think it's a very accurate way to put it.
Well, and before we go, I want to tell the audience out there that one of the things that really leapt out at me as I was reading the book, and that I thought about it again as I'm holding the book here in my hands, is what a quality operation you've got going here. Everything about this book, about the physical book itself, is just it's a pleasure to own and to hold and read. It's put together so well. It's got such a beautiful font. It's easy to read. And, you know, even the tactile sensation of the paper feels good in your hand. The cover is comfortable. The paper is just a perfect egg white. And these books are all available in regular print and large print, right?
That's correct.
Well, I guess we're going to call it a night. And we'll be back next week with another show. And we're going to be, you know, this is what we're doing right now. It's a work in progress. We're learning as we go. And we're going to be making some changes to format that are exciting to us. And I hope that all of you guys will stick with us. We sure appreciate you listening. Good night. Good luck.